Tonight is the time to participate in Holden Hilarity as it's known, has been known in the past and hopefully will continue to be in the future, to get together and tell some stories and bust a gut, as it were. Somehow it's good exercise and for our faces and our stomachs if we have a few good laughs. So as I was thinking about this and how we might go about this evening, I was thinking about sort of categories of stories that are funny and what people might want to offer. I think you can kind of bring in anything you want, but in order to start things out, I'll tell my most embarrassing dating story. Which
is this true?
This is a true story. This is not a lie. This is a true story. And when you're 30 years old and still single, you've had a few experiences of bad dates. So this is probably the worst one, by far the worst one. 4 years ago, I was doing an internship out in New Jersey, and people were very concerned about the fact that I didn't have friends my own age. So there was an older couple that invited me to attend a folk dance for the Norwegians and the Swedes in the area, which there were not very many in New Jersey, let me tell you. So I went to attend thinking I was going to be participating with a group of 65 and 70-year-olds in this folk dancing. Well, there was one young man there, in quotes, by the name of Hatch. And Hatch came up and asked me if I wouldn't like to dance with him. Hatch was a big, burly guy and wore a Super Bowl ring. He had played for the Cleveland Browns and the Kansas City Chiefs, and he played with the Chiefs while when they won the Super Bowl, which was the second Super Bowl that was won. And that was when I was in the second grade. So Hatch maybe wasn't as young as I thought he was going to be. So he asked me out on the dance floor, and I go with him, and we're doing the dancing thing, which little folk dancing out there, and he starts whispering sweet nothings in my ear, like, "You look like you're made of good stock." I thought, "Am I a cow?" "You know, you don't wear much of that war paint. War paint, that's what I call the stuff that the women I date put on. Shoot, I could feed my hunting dogs for 2 months for what they pay to put that war paint on once a week. I'm telling you." I was like, "Oh, great. Get me out of this guy's clutches." And then to top it off, he says to me, "You got some broad shoulders there. Were you a shock putter?" The worst one was I couldn't admit to him that, yes, in fact, I was a shock putter, because I didn't want to admit that to him. So when the time came that I got out of the event without giving him my telephone number, except that the couple who invited me to the dance were also good friends of Hatch, and he was interested in my going out with him on a date for a hunting experience. So he calls me up and he says, "Catherine, how would you like to come hunting with me? You can sit in the front seat where my two dogs used to sit. They're dead now, but you can sit right there in the front seat with me." Oh, no. Oh, I must have something to do. So, anyway, that's the end of my story. It's very lighthearted. I have worse dating stories, I'm sure.
So. Worse than that.
Well, I told people that 30 years of experience of dating, you can certainly have quite a few bad experiences.
You started young.
Yeah.
So.
I started when I was 24.
You didn't tell us whether you went to catch to go hunting.
Well,
in the dog's seat or not.
I didn't sit in the dog's seat, and the part that I left out was, as we were talking on the phone, he also says, "Well, I'm just laying here on my bed like a big old bear." And I thought, "That's fine. You stay there. I'm here, you're there, we're in great shape." So, I just never went out with Hatch, but I told my parents I didn't want to date someone the same age as my parents. I was a little nervous about that.
I have one about dating.
Oh, another dating story.
I just came in.
Go ahead, Janet.
Go ahead.
You're on.
This is Karen. She wouldn't mind if I told her who I went camping with last summer. When she was in high school, she really had a crush on this guy, and she really wanted to ask her out, and he finally did. So they went out to a movie, and everything was going really perfect, and they were sitting in the movie, his arm around her, and all of a sudden the movie theater was kind of quiet, but there was some part in it that she thought was really funny, and you know how you kind of take in a breath of air to laugh? So the whole theater is quiet, and she no, she went. Echoed all throughout the whole theater because nobody else will have.
That was the last day, right?
That was the first and the last. The beginning and the end.
I've got a good church one. When I was an altar boy, and I grew up in a Catholic church, and we always had altar boys. One day, it was like a high mass, and these are one of these things that's like a two-hour mass, and they sing all the songs, and kind of like Eucharist on Sunday. And they, halfway through the service, the priest leaned over me and said, I have to bless everyone with holy water. Here's the holy water, what do they call them, the scepter, they sprinkle, basically. And they sprinkle people, and they said, he said, you go back to that, there's a little canister back there by the confessionals, and fill it up. And he said, make sure it's plumb full, because this is a big mass. And I'm like, you know, and I went out, and I went all the way back, and you kind of snuck around, and the mass was still going on, and I got to there, little canister to fill it up, and there was no water at all in the canister. And here I am as a high mass. I know that you know, he's got to do it. So I went to the bathroom and I turned on the water and I, by the power invested in me, I now make you holy. I filled it up. They blessed everyone. I never told anybody. It was holy.
I bet it was.
I was serious about it. I tried to say all the right words. You know, I knew a few Latin, you know, dominoes.
I got a college degree from a Catholic school, and I found that the Catholic fathers, the brothers there, it was the University of Portland, could really laugh at themselves, and I thought their sense of humor about their own religion, their own faith was miraculous. But one of them told the story about one day he and a Methodist minister were going across eastern Oregon. They were going to a meeting somewhere, and they happened to be riding together because it was convenient. And as they're going across this flat desert land, why, a little jackrabbit started across the road, and the car hit him, and the jackrabbit bounced over the side of the road. And they thought, oh my, we just can't go on and leave one of God's creatures there by the side of the road. We've got to stop and see if there's anything that we can do. So they stopped, and they went back. And the Catholic father reached under his robe and pulled out the little scepter and waved it twice and with the holy water, and the rabbit bounced up and ran off into the sagebrush. And the Methodist minister said, my gosh, he says, I better look into this. There seems to be more of this holy water than I thought there was. And the father says, that wasn't holy water, that was hair restore.
I have one about holy water.
We're on a holy water roll.
Because I used to be Catholic too, and I went to the cathedral in St. Paul, and the holy water thing was a big deal then, you know, it was out in the vestibule kind of. When you first came in, everybody would dip their hand in and go like this as they went by. This is a long time ago. But it was about 50 below out, and the holy water was frozen solid that morning. So everybody's kind of gathered around there looking at it. And then when this guy came, the guy right in front of me came and took out his pipe and crashed it. What was that important?
Did you hear the story about the Methodist minister and the Baptist minister and the Catholic minister in the small town? And they were a long way away from others of their faith. And And they'd meet together informally once or twice a week and have coffee. And one day they were talking about confession. And they agreed that confession was certainly good for them spiritually, but there wasn't anybody of their own faith to confess to for miles. And they were so isolated. And they said, well, you know, maybe we ought to do a little confessing to each other. It might help us. And they agreed that that was a good idea. So Catholic priest started in. He says, well, this is my biggest sin is the sacramental wine. He says, when I'm serving the sacraments and I'm supposed to take a little sip of that, sometimes I take a pretty big jolt. And just once in a while I get into it, even when I'm not serving the sacraments. That's my biggest sin. And the Baptist minister says, well, my biggest sin is during baptisms, when one of those sweet young things comes up out of that baptismal font with a wet cotton robe clinging to every curve of her body. He says, I look a little harder than I should. I know I do. And he says, that's my biggest sin. Methodist minister says, well, my biggest sin is gossip, and I can hardly wait to get out of here.
Catherine asked me to specialize in the environment this week and next, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I have is a quiz for you. It's three questions, and anybody who gets all three answers right gets to buy me an ice cream cone.
Woohoo! Let me be the first!
Right. So you got to get all three right. So first question is, what did the girl mushroom say to the boy mushroom? You're a fun guy. Okay, moving right along.
No one gets to buy you an ice cream cone.
Right, so we're out of it. And the next question on the natural history theme is, why did the mountain sheep ram run off the cliff?
He didn't see the U-turn?
Right.
Now you owe him this ice cream.
Okay, and the other one is actually a little bit longer, and there's a moral to the story.
It's a lot longer.
But we'll make it short. It seems many, many years ago, there was a retired knight. His name was Sir Hugh, and he was retired from rescuing people from dragons. But he, one night, was at his fire, and this person came to the door, and he let him in, and Sir Hugh discovered from this person that there were a group of evil friars who had decided to capture all of the flowers. And apparently in concentric circles, as you went out from their castle, there were just no flowers, and it was a very terrible thing. And the people in that region, they asked this messenger to go get Sir Hugh because of his reputation for curing problems, dragons or whatnot. And finally, Sir Hugh decided to go, and sure enough, he left his beautiful home with lots of flowers, and as he got closer and closer, there's fewer and fewer flowers, and finally none at all, and there on the hill was this black castle, and all across the top were these evil friars yelling nasty things at him down there, which finally irritated him enough, and I'll shorten this up, there's lots more, but he finally went in, smashed his way through the door. He had to kill off all the evil friars and release the flowers again upon the earth. And the question is, what's the moral of this story? The moral of the story is, only Hugh can prevent florist friars.
Oh, you want morals, huh?
Yeah.
That these people lived on this one island, and there's these foo birds, and these birds were really a friendly bird, and they really liked them, but if the foo bird ever pooped on them, the moment that they wash the poop off, they die. They would just die, okay? And so basically whatever they did was they spent their whole day just running around trying to avoid the poop bird, you know, basically, so with the poop on. And when once they got on, it would just get smellier and smellier and smellier until they finally washed it off and they died. Got down to one last person, and this guy was dodging and dipping all around and made it like 3 or 4 weeks, and all of a sudden, just got dumped down. And he just thought, oh, I don't know. But he just kind of hung out, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and it was just getting so bad. Then he just washed it off and died. You know what the moral of the story is? If the foo shits, wear it.
Beep! There's a 5 second delay
it was
on this
one. That is at least.
There's a 5 second delay, and so therefore, me.
I'll tell a true story now.
Okay.
About some years ago, my oldest daughter was about, so high, about 3 years old. We were in a movie over in West LA out there. And they had a nature show talking about rams. And they were butting head on and having to show the battle up there. And she got real nervous about this. So I whispered to her and tried to explain what they were doing. And she raised an high voice and said, "Hey, Daddy, is that how they get married?" And you could hear it in the whole show.
No.
Your son just licked the whiteboard.
There's an age at which kids start first getting the concept of jokes, and they'll go through a stage of making up jokes, which often when they tell you the punchline, it doesn't have much to do with anything. You kind of sit there baffled, and my cousins were in this stage of development, and my cousin said to my aunt one time, she said, "Mom, I've got a joke for you." "Okay, what's the joke?" "Why did the frog jump into the pond?" My aunt, "I don't know, why did the frog jump into the pond?" And she said, "To get away from the horny toad."
Let's stay on the risque theme slightly. This is the last natural history question. Later. There's a science that studies naked birds.
Yeah.
A science that studies naked birds. What's the name of that? Pornithology.
Daddy.
Well, I know a story that was actually written up in a book, and anyone who reads John Hassler might be familiar with this, but it supposedly is true. I think that you mean, I don't know, whatever, that we actually know the person.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, it was, there was this priest, and he had some people over for a meal, and had a bunch of wild mushrooms and had gone out and picked them and served like a salad with these mushrooms and was, you know, had got out his little guide and was sure that these were edible. But unfortunately, he'd given some to the cat ahead of time too. I guess it was like a mushroom souffle or something, I don't know. And anyway, the cat, while they were eating their dinner, halfway through, he looked at the cat and the cat was just kind of going into like spasms on the floor, and he thought, "Oh my gosh, the mushrooms, they weren't edible." And he said, I really hate to tell you this. I think that my cat's going to die here. I gave it some of the mushrooms like an hour earlier before you all came for dinner. And he said, we need to go to the hospital and get our stomachs pumped because I'm afraid I'm poisoning you. So they all went to the hospital and they got their stomachs pumped, which I'm sure is not very pleasant. And they came back and the priest got back to his house and not feeling very well, looked and all of a sudden saw his cat with a litter of new cats. Perfectly healthy and fine. Much better than I don't know if he told his friends.
Jacob's.
My phone.
In Jacob's Prairie, Minnesota.
How about some beer?
When I was young, we had two horses, and I also had two brothers, so there were three boys and two horses. And so there was always kind of like a competition of who would get the horses. And one day I kind of got the one horse that I shouldn't have, and I have two older brothers, and they decided that I needed to learn a lesson. So when they finally cornered me and they ripped me off the horse, they grabbed a horse turd and they shoved it in my mouth. And they did not let me up until I swallowed it. I had pretty mean brothers. And it hasn't affected me.
I went to a lecture with three friends, and we all sat in the front row. This was at Wartburg Seminary, and there was this distinguished professor who was giving the lecture. And, well, we heard one lecture, and then another one was going to come and give a lecture. And so one of my friends decided she was going to leave. And she said, well, I'll catch you later at lunch. And we said, oh, that was fine. So she went out what we thought was an exit door. She went around the corner, went through a door, and we sat there for a few minutes, and he hadn't quite begun yet. So I said to my friend, I think I'm going to go too, and I'll catch you at lunch too. And she said, fine. And so I got up and I went to the door, and I peeked around the corner. And there was my friend, who I thought had left, sitting in a broom closet. And she was crouched down with the brooms hanging down and pails around her. And I said, what is going on here? And she said, this is not an exit. This is a broom closet. I said, what are we going to do? The lecture's about to begin. She said, sit down. We did. We both crouched there. Standing next to us and pails all around us and listened to the lecture. And the poor man got halfway through his lecture when he noticed we were there. And then he got very disoriented. He was giving this lecture and he kept looking over at us and we kept looking up at him. And that lasted until the lecture was over. And then I said, well, what do we do now? I mean, there's this whole audience, right? They thought we had gone or something. So she said, fake it. So we got up, as the lecture was ending, we got up, we tried to walk nonchalantly out. Our other friend saw us and went, as we walked by, we saw a door, you know, and we tried to nonchalantly open it. It was locked. And so we were, and it was very strange.
I think we should tell him that a guest pastor of our church some time back, he was got an older fellow, he kind of retired, and he said he had a cancer operation, and his clothes were kind of loose, but about the end of the when he finished the church services, he kind of grabbed his robe and he said, "You know, I was never so embarrassed."
Oh.
And his pants fell. Now, he said, "I should have got some suspenders." And his pants fell. Oh. While he walked out there, he told me his pants out of his robe. Oh. And they were hanging around his ankles.
This is true.
Yeah. Everybody clapped.
He wasn't the belt and suspenders type of that.
Makes me think of a story of a missionary that decided when he went to Papua New Guinea that he was going to preach in the language he had studied, and he'd done his language studies, and so it was the first time he was going to go up and preach. And he went through and he did pretty well. The congregation was clearly listening to what he was saying. So he got through the sermon and he was so happy, he was so excited, and finished the service, came to the end, said the benediction, and started walking towards the back, and the crowd, the congregation was absolutely stunned, and some were snickering. He had said, he found out later, that "I'm going to the back to undress." And the crowd was like, "Where is he?" So the language story.
I was working for the FA in Alaska some years back. And we had, I don't really know if anybody's familiar with that, Ketchikan and Annette Island over there on his coast guards. And they've got some buildings down there which were used during the war for officers, and then they reused, Pan Am was using them for if the airplane was grounded there, and they could put a load in. But these were kind of remote, up kind of in a muskeg. And they also had a row of these. They were on, like somebody in Vietnam or somewhere built in the jungle on piling with the water running underneath. And it was a real rainy night. And there's a restaurant in there. It was one of the few restaurants. But at night they closed it up, and the manager lived about a block or two over there. And it was just pouring rain. And I walked out of my room and never had any keys for the room. Everything was quiet. Everybody left the restaurant. It was all gone. I had to go to the bathroom. So I came out of the room and I shut the door, slammed the door, and it locked. And I had my PJs on. I was out there in the sitting room in the restaurant, and I knew that when morning came, there was going to be a crowd there to eat. I'd get out there in my PJs, no way to get back into my clothes. And I laid out there in the divan for a while, and kind of laughed. I said, "It's funny, but what am I going to do?" And I finally came back and I noticed the transom had kind of loose there. It's in the screws, you'd screw them up my hands. So I reached up here about high grease and it was in the transom. And then I pulled myself and crawled over and fell in the transom. Fell over the place, and when I hit the ground, the door started opening and people were looking around to see what's going on.
A friend of mine spent several years in Greece and became quite a fan of stuff, grape leaves and all those specialties, right? Greek food. Then came back to the U.S. and settled on the West Coast. And if you've ever driven Interstate 80 from the West Coast back to like Wisconsin, you know the tediousness of it. And so he'd gotten tired of eating Nevada and Utah and Wyoming food, and he spent the night in Sydney, Nebraska, in a motel, and he's paging through the phone book looking for something that was unusual. And this name caught his eye, Yendez's restaurant. All right, Greek food in Sydney, Nebraska, of all places. Getting his mouth watering for stuffed grape leaves. And he goes with his wife and down finally after the shower and get down to the restaurant. Can't wait, Greek food is coming. This gum-chewing high school girl comes over and slaps the waitress down. Oh, the, slaps the menu down, and he eagerly opens it up and he sees ham, and he sees hamburgers, and he sees all the mashed potatoes. all the standard things. And he turns to her and he says, "Excuse me, ma'am, but Yendes is a Greek name. Where's the Greek food on your menu? And this high school girl looks at him and says, "Greek? Yendes is Sydney spelled backwards."
Do people know what the Myers-Briggs test is, where you test like the personality type that you are? Do some people know that? Well, there's certain categories when you're tested that that show how you are. One of the categories is perceiving, which is known as a P, and then the opposite of that is judging, which is a J. And you usually are either a judging person, which means that you're more organized and you can make judgments quickly and things are kind of in order, or you're a P, which means sometimes things are kind of chaotic and you perceive people more and you kind of understand. Well, I worked at a Catholic college before I came here, and anyway, she's real organized, definitely a J, and Jamie would fall into the P category. And this other nun walked by and she said, she just looked at the office and the two kind of, you know, comparisons, and she said, "Jamie, your penis is showing." he said he just went, he didn't know what to do. You know, he thought, "Oh, my God, like, and he just thought, turned around and he looked out, and then
Chucky Cheese.
Jenna.
Oh, our granddaughter, they would go to Chuck E. Cheese a lot, and then
it's a pizza
pizza place, and the mother was very helping her to understand the body parts, and so the Chuck E. Cheese has a kind of a tail that kind of comes up, and she went up to the Chuck E. Cheese is dressed up there with
a mouse.
Yeah. And has a tail on it. Oh, is that your penis?
When I was in grad school, I did an internship in an infant program. And early in the semester, there was a nun in this graduate program who had never worked with young children, with infants. And she was holding a baby, and I had just seen her change this baby's diaper, and then she was holding it, and so I asked her, I said, "Well, was the baby a boy or a girl?" And she said, "Well, I don't know." And I said, "Well, you just changed his diaper, didn't you?" She said, "But I didn't look."
This is an old one around Holden, but St. Peter was checking people in at the Golden Pearly Gates one day, and the computer broke down. The huge crowd gathered there, and it was piling up. And there were three Lutheran bishops in the front row, and finally they got the computer straightened out, and St. Peter sent the attendants way to the back and got this person, brought him up front, and admitted him to heaven. And these bishops began to complain. They said, "We've, after all, led a very worthwhile life on earth and everything we deserve. We've been in line here, we deserve to get in." St. Peter says, "Well, that guy was a Holden bus driver, and he scared the hell out of more people than all three of them put together."
Our oldest granddaughter was about 2.5 years old, and we were going out
came out of the bedroom and she said, "Oh, Grandma, you're beautiful." And I thought, "Oh, this is really nice." I said, "Oh, thank you." So we took her along and out the door. And she said, "Oh, the moon is so beautiful." And I thought, "Okay." We drove along a little way. She said, "Isn't that dog just beautiful?" I knew it was just a new word she had learned.
If you haven't figured it out, there's a small child present here. He's showing us a picture of a bear. Isn't it beautiful? Yeah. My new
one,
beautiful. Special, yeah,
that's special. I was in Puerto Rico and we went to a Vieques Island with a bunch of us on a trip, and when we got out there, the little question about, there was a house and a restroom there and our bathroom, and I think Maureen misled me. She said, "Well, this is the one the men are going to use over here, the women are going to use that one." I went in here to change my clothes and bathing suit were going down there. I was kind of back in the, around the corner. And all of some women, a couple of three women come in there, I heard them talking. I said, "Oh, wait a minute, I'll be out." I didn't want anything. I wanted them to come something in there and then find me in there hiding. And they, we went down, then joined together, go down and take a swim. And there was these ladies and all of us walking down there. And my the clerk, or secretary, the newbie said, "Oh, have you met Vince Womack?" And the woman says, "Yeah, I met him in the ladies' restroom."
The more embarrassing moments that I had when we were in the library, somebody mentioned earlier that the women there don't wear all that many clothes from the waist up. And we just got there, and we had to go out to a small village to have, or actually it was out to the leprosy center to have a service and give communion out there. And so we'd process through the stores and then came time for the people to come up for communion, and they all gathered in a circle, and my wife and I were both going along to be communion. And, one lady had a little baby on her back, and the baby started to cry. And so, just as Muriel was going by to give her the element, took out one of her breasts and wrapped it around under her arm to give it to the baby to drink. And my wife just kind of... And I mean, they have a tendency to kind of... They've had, you know, 8 or 10 children, and they kind of stretch out, and so
I'd like to see that.
Wow!
Incredible.
A clown. A clown.
I know Ollie and Minto.
Right.
This is a Carol Tomer special, so some of you probably heard it. Ollie and Lena were they were on their honeymoon or their 50th anniversary, and he took her back to the same hotel that they had been at on their wedding night. And she was sitting in bed, and she said, "Ollie, you know, I still have that same warm spot in my heart for you, like when we were married." And he said, "Lena, I think it's your breath that's in the coffee."
Well, we get on a theme here.
We're trying to be inclusive.
Yeah. Inclusive.
Body
parts.
Body parts now. This story took place in Switzerland at a cafeteria. And an older woman came in and she got a bowl of soup, which was going to be her supper, and she brought it to the table and remembered she didn't have a spoon. So she went back to get a spoon, and when she came back, she found a young man, an African student, sitting there eating her soup. So she wanted to be open-minded and Christian and so on, so she sat down and with her spoon and then proceeded to eat the soup with him. First he would take a bite, and then she would take a bite. And they finished the soup, and then he went back and got a plate full of spaghetti and came back with two forks. And so they each took a fork and they proceeded to eat the spaghetti. And when they finished that, the young man smiled with a twinkle in his eye and left. And she thought she had really done a good deed that day. And she got up, and as she walked away, she saw this bowl of soup that someone had left on the table. It was getting cold.
Botswana, and my parents and brother came to visit me, and we went on a trip. We rented a land cruiser. We were in the thick of elephant country, and we were camping, and the ground is about this deep of sand. We can't move very quickly anyway, but we were camping, and we'd been talking about all the great animals that we've seen, and all sorts of wonderful ones that day. And all of a sudden, about a little ways away, we heard a very loud noise, and when we looked up, and it was a tree, which was about this big around, being shaken by this elephant. And the elephant was about maybe 50 yards away. And I, you know, I was the person who'd been in Africa for a long time, so I knew all about these animals. And I said, "Oh, don't worry, you know, it'll stay over there and shake the tree and go away. You don't need to worry about it." And we were standing, kind of have to do a diagram. But the tree is over here, and the truck we had was here, and then we had kind of a campfire here, and then tents, right here, two tents. And we were standing around the campfire, just eating. In the back of the Land Cruiser, we had a big box that was open that had all of our food and everything else. And we were standing around talking about the elephant, and all of a sudden the elephant stopped shaking the tree and came walking over towards us, and came walking over to the truck. And before we could do anything, it had its trunk in this box with all of our food, and it grabbed a bag of apples and put the whole thing in its mouth, a bag of potatoes, put the whole thing in its mouth, a loaf of bread wrapped up in plastic, put the whole thing in its mouth. What else? Some meat, and I think a few carrots. Anyway, just continuous, all the food. And my dad kept trying to get over there to close the lid on it. And I kept saying, no, don't. You don't want to frighten it away. Or you don't want to scare its little charge. And so we were all standing there. And by this time, my brother was standing there shaking, and my mother was standing there shaking. And I was trying to be brave because, you know, they weren't going to hurt us. We were fine. And finally, my dad got this lid closed. And then the elephant started nosing around in the rest of the truck. And I had, my parents brought me a radio cassette player, and we'd taken it along on a trip in case we wanted to listen to music. And I hadn't had anything like that for a while, and so I was all tight. And the elephant picked up a bag, which happened to be the bag with this cassette player in it, and lifted it up. And as it was going up, I said, "That's my," and it came down, and the elephant stepped on it. And I said, "My cassette player," and it squashed it. In the meantime, my dad starts running over and getting branches to try and frighten the elephant, and I'm telling him, "No, don't do that. You don't know what's going to happen." And so, he's kind of running around, and my brother and my mom are still standing there shaking on the other side of the fire because they think that's going to protect them. And in the meantime, the elephant gets tired of this and decides to come around this way, back around the truck towards where the tents were. And elephants don't have great eyesight or anything that's going to happen next. So then the next thing, my dad ran over, and luckily we hadn't put any stakes in the ground because it was sand anyway. And so he ran over and grabbed both tents and picked them up and ran away from there. So the elephant then just kind of walked where the tents would have been and went off into the night. And by this time, we were all very frightened. And we weren't really looking forward to sleeping in those tents where the elephant might come back. And there was a cement bathroom, kind of a little ways off from where we were. And so we grabbed our sleeping bags and we all went. And we all kind of squished into the bathroom and we slept there that night. And it wasn't very funny then, but it's funny now.
Tell the end of the story. What'd you do about the food and everything?
Well, we were actually, the next day, towards the end of the day, we were getting to a town. And so during the next day, I think we had some tuna fish and a box of crackers that hadn't gotten eaten. So we ate that until we got some other food.
Usually you get some good jokes at these things from the balcony. I haven't heard much
coming
down.
Sounds like
German Deutschland. How about some Deutschland stories?
Only in German.
That's all right.
It seems that there's two types of people in the world. There's joke tellers and joke listeners. And Robert didn't do a very good job of getting the joke tellers in there. In the villages, lots of listeners.
That was a story about Quasimodo, the hunchback of Notre Dame. And he'd gotten real old and time to retire. And so he was looking to put the word out that he needed someone to take his place. And the first young man to show up was one who didn't have any arms. I interviewed him. He said, "How in the world are you going to be able to ring the bell?" Well, thought he could do it with his head. And so he said, "Okay, well, I'll try you out." And so they made their way up the tower, the bell. And so he proceeds to bang the bell with his head. And sure enough, he was able to ring it. And he got really going strong. But in doing it, he lost his balance and he fell off to the scaffolding and down and he was killed down there. And the crowd gathered around and Quasimodo came down and they were wondering, "Who is this? Who is this?" And Quasimodo was kind of shaking his head, "Well, his face rings a bell." Then his brother, the dead bell ringer's brother, turned up. And so I said, "Well, you'll have to be careful. You know what happened to your brother." So anyway, he went up and he got to ringing the bell. And it got it going real good. But this time the clapper came loose. And it knocked him, too, off the rafters and down to the ground again. Then the crowd gathered and they were wondering who this poor fellow was down there. And Quasimodo came back down and he looked at him and he said, "Well, He's a dead ringer for his brother. And another fellow showed up. And he said, well, I think I can do it. He said, well, Cosmo said, well, the clapper's missing from the bell. Now, I don't know how I'm going to be able to ring it. He said, well, I think I can make a sound that'll make it resonate, you know. And, so they went up to the tower again, and so he was humming. Sure enough, the bell got to ringing, and well, this fellow lost his balance too, and he fell down, and the crowd gathered again, and Cosmo comes back down there, and then they all say, no, who is it? Who's this guy? He says, well, he's a good humdinger.
Well,
we can't just you can't leave it like that.
You can't end it like that?
Oh, I think that was a good one.
Tom has to have the last word.
God and St. Peter were all gulping one day.
Peter.
Yeah, God and St. Peter. And at every hole, God would get out a certain club and say, you know, Arnold Palmer would use this club. He was doing really, really well. He was doing a really good game. Got to the 18th hole, and God was about 100 feet from the green, and he said, but there was a water drop right in front of him, and he said to St. Peter, Arnold Palmer would use a 7-iron here. And so he got a 7-iron out, and right into the water. He just looked at St. Peter and he said, I know that Arnold Palmer would use a 7-iron here. Took out another ball, set it down, right into the water, and he was just frustrated. So he walked out on the water, and the ball came right out of the water, and just as he was about to hit it, a golfer came up to St. Peter and said, who is that guy? I think he is Jesus Christ. And St. Peter said, no, Arnold Palmer.
I do know one.
I was going to say, that can't be the last word.
Lee Trevino is a pretty funny guy, and he was struck by lightning out on a golf course once. And it's actually one of the most dangerous places to be during any time because of lightning. Anyway, somebody asked Lee Trevino later what you should do to prevent from being struck by lightning. If you're out on the golf course and it starts being dangerous. He says, well, reach into your golf bag and grab your 1-iron and hold it out straight up over your head. Why? I mean, that's metal. That'd be even more dangerous. And he said, oh no, not even God can hit a 1-iron.
We've had a plethora of bird stories, but maybe I could tell a quintessential bird story to end all bird stories.
Oh, okay.
The pirate that, the old decrepit pirate with the peg leg and the hook for the arm and the patch over his eye, and somebody asked him how he about his injuries, and he said, well, he lost the leg in the storm, the mast fell down and pinned him to the deck, and they cut off his leg to get him out from under it, and that's the way he lost his leg. And he lost his arm in a saber fight, was cut off, and that's how he got the hook. And he lost his eye, and he happened to look up, and a seagull pooped in it. guys, well, you shouldn't lose your eye to seagull poop. And he says, you do if it's the first day you've had a hook.
I didn't hear one other story about Bert. Friend up at a church in New Westminster, he'd always do a practical joke on people, and he was out walking in the woods with a big friend one day, and the friend was walking up the hill on the trail.
Mama?
He was walking along, and he noticed near the bush, some dog had done a poop there. And so he took his hat off, and he put it over, and he says, hey, Joe, come here, quick. And he said, what is it? He says, I've got a bird under this hat, but I'm afraid to grab it. I hold the hat, you reach underneath and get it. Bird. So the guy did it. But there's a moral to the story. A bird in the hand is worth poo in the bush.
Well, I think,
yeah, good job.
Let's get our song going.